Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. Today, while not everything is racist,
they're deflecting.
Some things actually are.
Ilhan Omar.
Oops.
I said, well, she doesn't have a backpack.
Why a return to reasonable labels is good for us all. Plus, why the president of Seattle's police union is actually hopeful that our nation's defunding debate is dying out.
I think this is a stunning 180.
Hello and welcome to the Undivided Podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz on this Black Friday. As I come to you, I have already done a little bit of my Black Friday shopping. Not a lot. You know, it's funny. I think the older you get, the less appealing that is. And the less appealing Christmas gifts in general are. I did do some shopping for a gift exchange for kids in the Snoqualmie Valley. And so that was fun because I got to buy gifts for, I don't have kids. And so I got to buy gifts for like a 3-year-old boy and a 13-year-old boy and an 8-year-old girl. And it's interesting, I stopped some, I was like, what do kids want these days? Oh, the kids are so tech savvy. So I was with my mother who's in town from Fargo and we were at Target and I stopped, I saw this kid, he looked about 13. I said, hey, how old are you? And he's like, probably freaked out. He goes, 12. I said, what would you want for Christmas? This kid was so sweet though. And I ended up getting a soccer ball and a soccer net for this 13-year-old. So it was really fun. But I hope you all had just a tremendous Thanksgiving with family, if you felt so inclined. I know it was really good to see people back together and enjoying time face-to-face for once. I had my mother in again and then my boyfriend's family over and we had a really, really nice time. Ate too much, obviously. And I just got done with my first round of leftovers. Oh, I've felt prettier. I think the women listening will know what I mean. All right, let's dive into some issues today. You know, I did my last Undivided episode was entitled Everything is Racist. And one of the stories I talked about was the recall against Seattle's Socialist City Councilwoman Shama Sawant, who's a woman of color. And she's been saying from the very beginning, and the stranger saying, oh, if you vote to take her out of office on December 7th, you're, not only are you right wing, but you're racist. And as we detailed on the show last week, the numbers just don't prove that. I mean, most of the donations are coming from inside her district. In an effort to unseat her. And we know that there are not a lot of racist or right-wingers up on the Capitol Hill in Seattle. So it's just silly. But just to underscore my point that you can oppose Shama Sawant while also not being a right-wing racist, I got a chance this week to speak with Victoria Beach. She is the chair of the Seattle Police Department's African American Community Advisory Council. She is Black, and she is supporting the recall effort against Shama Sawant. Victoria, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Victoria, do you support the recall of Councilman Shama Sawant? And if so, why?
I sure do. I support it because she is not above the law. She hasn't done her job that we voted her in to do. Well, I didn't vote her in, but she hasn't done her job. She hasn't done anything for District 3. She broke the law by taking that rowdy group to the mayor's house, down to City Hall. She has to go. She's an angry woman and is spreading her anger and hate in our city, and we don't need that.
Well, so Victoria, I obviously have to ask you then, if I'm playing by the stranger's rules, are you right wing?
That's hilarious. I come from a long line of Democrats. Very involved in politics, and I'm far from it. And, you know, being an African-American woman, it's a joke. And by them saying that, you know, it's because of her race and everything, they're deflecting. No. Skip the race. Answer all the other things that she has done. And they won't. They deflect. It, to me, she's like Trump. And that's all he did was this. Deflect and spread hate and anger. And that's what she does.
Well, and since you're not right wing, that was the second question I was going to ask you is then, according to the stranger, you must be racist.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. Has nothing to do with her race, and shame on her for playing the race card. Her tactics are to try to get people attention by using the race card. You know, if you want to bring race into it, if she were a Black woman, they wouldn't have gotten away with what she's done. There's no way. It wouldn't have even gone this far. Yeah.
Well, if she were a black woman, the Seattle City Council would have scared her out of the office of chief of police.
That's right.
You know, I know that you're very well connected in the community. Do you have any inkling of whether you think District 3 voters are going to remove her?
You know what? In the beginning, I doubted it, and I almost dropped out of, you know, helping. But I was out sign waving, and I cannot believe the cheers, the shouts, the horns honking, people rolling down their windows in the middle of the street. And most of them were African-American people saying, get rid of her. She's crazy. She hasn't done anything for us. She's broken out. I was shocked. And I thought, oh, I wish media was here. It was incredible. And it was a great feeling. I'm proud of the people that are leading this campaign, because they're not, even when they're being attacked verbally, they're not giving it back. So once her supporters are, they want to cuss you out and try to start a fight. They have to go, but we're going to be out every weekend. And if people want to join us, because you'll see how many people want to get rid of her. So I'm going to say, yeah, she's gone.
Now, I talked about, and I tried to tear down this argument that, you know, wanting Shama Sawan out of office for a number of charges that were approved by the Washington State Supreme Court is not about race. Calling it racist is about fear-mongering. And I really believe that there is this terrible, it's not even a trend at this point, it's a practice on the left, by some in the left, of labeling every single thing racist, bringing race into every single issue, like the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And racist is one of the most serious things I think you can be called, and I would argue probably the most serious thing that you can be called. To throw around that label so loosely, it really starts to dilute the meaning. For instance, during this past election in Seattle, Lorena Gonzalez, who was running for mayor, ran an ad against Bruce Harrell that featured a white rape survivor. And she said she wasn't going to vote for Bruce Harrell because Bruce Harrell had stood up for former Seattle Mayor Ed Murray, who was accused of sexually assaulting young men. And the white woman didn't have anything, her terrible attack didn't have anything to do with Ed Murray. And so then it didn't have anything to do with Bruce Harrell. And so Lorena Gonzalez was called out by some communities members who said that she was being racist, that the ad was racist. And look, I didn't understand the ad. You know, you could have just gone after Bruce Harrell for supporting or standing behind Ed Murray and left the woman out of it. And so definitely the ad could have been done better. But do I believe that Lorena Gonzalez, a Latina and one of the most progressive members of the Seattle City Council, is racist? No, I don't believe she has a racist bone in her entire body. But that's my example of, like, everyone's called racist for everything. And that's just stupid. I mean, come on. That being said, the reality is that there is still a lot of racism out there to highlight. Case in point, Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert of Colorado. Well, over Thanksgiving, she had some sort of speaking engagement, and video from that speaking engagement surfaced where she was talking about her fellow member of Congress, Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota.
Actually, I have an Ilhan story for you. So,
oh, man.
So the other night on the House floor was not my first Jihad Squad moment. So I was getting into an elevator with one of my staffers, and he and I were leaving the Capitol, we're going back to my office, and we get in the elevator, and I see a Capitol police officer running hurriedly to the elevator. I see fret all over his face, and he's reaching, and I'm like, what? I can't, the door's shutting, like, I can't open it. Like, what's happening? I look to my left, and there she is, Ilhan Omar.
Whoops.
And I said, well, she doesn't have a backpack. We should be fine.
We all know what Congresswoman Boebert meant by that. You can pretend that you don't. You can pretend that, you know, her words are being taken out of context. Ilhan Omar is Muslim, and she was making a suicide bomber joke, period. Lauren Boebert, and I'm actually very surprised by this, Congresswoman Boebert apologized for that statement. And the reason I'm surprised she apologized is because her brand is to be a firebrand, is to rile people up, is to be unapologetic. But she did issue an apology for what she said. She wrote on Twitter, "I apologize to anyone in the Muslim community I offended with my comment about Rep. Omar. I have reached out to her office to speak with her directly. There are plenty of policy differences to focus on without this unnecessary distraction." And you're right, it was an unnecessary distraction that you perpetrated. And so the fact that people are getting angry about something that you did, that's not us creating the distraction, that's you having created a distraction. And I hope that's what you're trying to acknowledge in that tweet. But we should all be able to hear those comments and say, look, that's racist. That is anti-Muslim. I don't care what her political affiliation is. It is very obvious what her meaning and intent was with those comments. And, you know, I think for folks on the right who might be quick to try to defend Representative Boebert, just remember that we're trying to build a movement here where we have a return to reasonable outrage, reasonable anger, reasonable labels, where we react proportionately to what was said or done. And in order to get the left to stop this practice of calling every single thing racist, we all have to make sure that we're acknowledging instances of actual racism, regardless of the political party of the person perpetrating them. And we all have to be vocal in rejecting fake outrage. And so that's what I wanted to say today is, you know, I did these segments on everything is racist. And the reality is everything is not racist, as we know. But some things are. And it's important that we get back to the point where we judge people based on their actions, not their affiliations. And that's one of the core tenets of Undivided, is to get back to that point where the very first thing that we consider when judging something or someone is to gauge how we feel about what they said or did. And then the political party they belong to, what they believe in, that's a secondary consideration. And that is the way that we can always be sure that our moral compass is pointing north, that we judge everyone by the same set of standards. Now, there was an example this week with Undivided viewers that I was really, really proud of. And I think it showed that those of you who listen to this podcast, those of you who watch Undivided and engage on my social media pages, by and large, are really trying to do what I just said, are trying to look at things through the same lens, judge things by the same set of criteria. And what I saw on my Facebook page, I had posted an article about Kyle Rittenhouse being acquitted back when he was acquitted. And then I posted an article of the three men convicted of murder in the death of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. And one of the things I had told you guys is a lot in the media and politicians talking heads were treating the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict like it was about race. Like race had something to do or should have had something to do with the verdict, which is wrong. And the vast majority of you seem to agree that interacted with this Facebook post that Kyle Rittenhouse was not guilty. On this post, November 19th, 10:56 a.m., my post was, "After 4 days of deliberations, a jury has found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges," and I linked to the article. 10,000 of you reacted to that post, and only 132 out of 10,000 put an angry emoji, which says to me that you don't agree with the verdict. I mean, I could be reading into that too far, but it says to me that 132 of 10,000 people who reacted to that post didn't agree with the verdict. So the vast majority of you agreed that this young man, this white young man, should have been acquitted, as he was. And so some people could look at that and say, oh, this is about race. That's just a bunch of white people who wanted a white kid to get off on murder charges. Well, let's fast forward a couple days. November 24th, 1:55 p.m., I posted an article that all three defendants found guilty on murder charges in Ahmaud Arbery case. Of course, all three of the defendants are white, and Ahmaud Arbery was black. 3,500 of you reacted to that, and only 12 expressed that they were angry with the verdict. Only 12 out of 3,500. That tells me that the vast majority of people reacting to that post agreed with the verdict that these three white men were guilty for murdering Ahmaud Arbery. Now, I don't know what that shows you, but what that shows me is people judging two cases on their merits rather than judging two cases on the basis of race. You had a vast majority of people who agreed with the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse, a white 18-year-old, and you had the vast majority of people who agreed with the conviction of three white men in the death of a black man, Ahmaud Arbery. That shows to me that I have some folks on my Facebook page, on my social media, who have an incredibly consistent moral compass. And you know what? That makes me pretty happy. The cases are terrible. But your ability to look at them and judge them on the merits is what every single American should be able to do. Okay, one more topic I want to fit in here. The president of Seattle's police union has been, what's the best way to put this? Angry, bummed out, frustrated with the state of politics in the city, and rightfully so. You have a city council that, you know, ran on the promise of hiring more officers, then turned around and pledged to defund officers at 50%, and as a result, hundreds of officers have left. The city's former police chief, Carmen Best, who people really loved, was scared out of the city. And so let's just say that the president of the police union that represents the agency's rank and file hasn't had a lot to be happy about, which is why I was very surprised that Officer Mike Solon, the president of SPOG, came out after the city council passed the 2022 budget and expressed relief, applauded the budget as a, quote, pivot away from unreasonable activism. I spoke with Mike Solon this week about his suddenly upbeat attitude.
Mike, thanks for being here.
Oh, hey, Brandy. Happy to be here. And congratulations to you for stepping out of the security blanket of corporate media. And, that takes guts. And we need your moderate voice now more than ever.
I appreciate it. Are you on happy pills or what's going on?
Happy pills. No, I'm just seeing, like, when you compare this budget debate versus last year, I think this is a stunning 180. And we must see the silver lining in this. Does it capture everything that I would have liked to have seen? No. But let's be honest. I mean, they talked about 50% defunding last year. And they did everything they could to virtue signal to the activist class. And I think our pushback collectively with moderate, reasonable voices in our area that were concerned about public safety issues could take credit for the council finally listening to the voters to a degree and pivoting.
Tell me what this budget does and does not do to SPD's budget.
Well, I'll go negative. And what it doesn't do is have any means of retaining the current police officers. And to me, that's the biggest takeaway that I equate that this isn't everything that we asked for. I mean, from time and time again, the past 2 years, the good people that are still a part of this agency have been maligned and besmirched by some of these elected officials. And it's been quite telling as we've lost hundreds of cops. And I would implore upon the new leadership taking the reins here in the city that if you're really concerned about public safety issues, take care of the current people that are doing the job, that have gone through the reform work, that were highly praised just days before George Floyd. And then sadly, due to politics, some of these same politicians ran away from us and threw us under the bus. So that's number one. The second is, hey, we'll take as many incentives to get new officers to fill the uniform. We're desperate for bodies. I'm hopeful that we're not in great competition with other cities that experienced the defunding nonsensical activism that we experienced, because those agencies that have lost all these people are competing with others, you know, for these same jobs. The politicians need to pivot more. Incentivizing new hires is a step in the right direction.
But the Seattle City Council did give SPD enough money in this budget to fully fund at least their plan for hiring in 2022. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It fully funded it, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
That's why I'm positive about it.
So is the city of Seattle ready to move away from serious discussions around defunding the police? I don't know. And if they are, what does that mean for other cities that have contemplated or are in the process of doing the same thing? One of the things Seattle has realized since the defunding debate began is, shocker, we need uniformed officers with a badge and a gun. That people want to make sure that they can get an officer to their location quickly if they're in the middle of a life or death emergency. And so what Seattle is starting to see, and Seattle really was at the forefront of the defunding debate, what Seattle is starting to see, perhaps before other cities, are the repercussions of that policy. And so for other cities in the country, one, it could be a signal to them that this is a dumb idea and they shouldn't even consider it. And for cities who have already begun this process, may what happened in Seattle be a precursor for what they too could face. And hopefully they can take that into consideration and they can right the ship before they have a public safety emergency on their hands. All right, thank you so much for joining us on the Undivided podcast. Again, happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I am so grateful for you. I really, truly am, for all of you who stood beside me in my crazy decision to quit my job and to embark on this journey. I am so grateful for you. Really, truly, you are top of mind for me as I count my blessings this Thanksgiving holiday. And for those out braving the Black Friday shopping crowds, good luck to you and be safe.